Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining me in this episode of What's Your Story, where we have conversations with trailblazers and amazing storytellers. Today, I have with me Tarun Maharishi, who's out with his debut novel, The Portrait of a Secret. Now, Tarun is a very multifaceted person. He's a lawyer from the National Law School in Bangalore and a graduate of the Indian School of Business in Hyderabad. He's worked as a corporate lawyer with two of India's leading law firms. He's worked as a chief operating officer for a sports marketing company in Delhi. In addition to writing, Tarun is also the co-founder of Astolos Energy, an EV startup. He's also an avid golfer. Tarun, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Absolutely my pleasure, and thank you for that introduction.
Okay, Tarun, tell us a bit about your book and your inspiration to write this book.
Let me answer the second one first. And there's a two-part answer to that question. The first is, the book was born out of an article in one of the mainlines many, many years ago. And at that point, when I read the article buried in page 3 or 4 or whatever it was, I had thought that it might actually be an interesting story to try and write at some point of time. But work is such, for most of us, I think, especially in India, that there is no time, there is no mental bandwidth to try and pursue something creatively. And ironically, it was COVID, which actually freed up that time. So during COVID, I was working for Reliance Sports. And generally, sports really died for the first 3 months when COVID came around, right? We didn't know what to do next. And till we figured it out, there was enough time on one's hands to sort of pursue other dreams and passions. And that's really where the book came from. So hopefully that answers that question, yeah.
And how did you, so you found the story, then you started writing it during COVID. How did you go about researching for this book? Because your book is so expansive and, you know, goes across different timelines. You've done a lot of research for it. So how did you go about, like, gathering research for this book?
So I'm not a particularly organized person. I'm definitely not a particularly organized writer. So I had the broad outline of a story in my head, which I did put down during the first 3 weeks of COVID. Maybe that was 60% of the first draft of a manuscript. And from there, I just kept thinking through more ideas, more layers that I could add onto the story. That's sort of how the complications, the various strings of it arrived. And fortunately, the 5 years of training in law school and the 4 years of working in law means research comes quite second nature to most lawyers. Right. So actually, once you have the kernel of an idea, getting into the skin of that particular idea is not so difficult. And honestly, it's not a work of history, right? This is a work of fiction. So without misrepresenting any fact, I don't need to be particularly accurate about how those things transpired in history. So that makes it a little bit easier. But it did take a fair bit of time to research it. We are talking about a 100-year time frame for that book, nearly a 100-year time frame for that book. And it can be extraordinarily hard to try and research something about the 40s or the 50s, right? It's really hard to find stuff on the internet, in print, in libraries, wherever else, which describes it in the way that might actually make it way into the book. So there's a lot of imagination that goes into it. I could say you talk to some older people to try and figure out what is happening at that point of time. But it's largely imagination that comes into play during that period, at least.
So, like, because your book is now based or sort of inspired on true events of things that happened in our country, did you have the opportunity to meet people who perhaps worked for, you know, the intelligence community in our country, or you know, people who were around when those events happened? Like, do you have like a fun story to share with us without revealing too many details? Like, I don't want to put anyone in trouble.
I can't and I won't reveal any names, of course, but I did have the pleasure of meeting three people who worked large parts of their career for Indian intelligence in various parts of Indian intelligence. And to my mind, what's remarkable is that there is a lot that India does within and outside its borders to protect and advance its own interests. And it is, I guess, how the spy world works, how we've seen it represented in movies and books. It's all very quiet. It's all very much in the background. And seldom do you see it hitting the headlines in any which way. But the sheer expanse of activities that we are engaged in is, to me, absolutely mind-boggling. And actually, a massive opportunity for Indian authors, for Indians to tell the story of how good their intelligence agencies are and how important they are to what the country is trying to achieve on the global stage. Right? And to my mind, we've ceded this entire space entirely to the American authors, maybe a couple of the British authors.
Right.
So for me, certainly, I'd like to write a lot more in this genre. And I'm hoping there are several more authors who would like to try and explore this a lot more as well. Right? We do a lot of movies in this genre, but we don't seem to do a lot of writing about it. Look, and from childhood, right, I still have memories of my grandparents having experienced partition and telling us stories about how awful a time that was and the challenges that both sides faced when all that went down. And I think some of that has found its way in the book. We don't deal with partition extensively, but the feelings of how chaotic, how unfortunate, how sort of emotional it was does, I think, come through in the book as well.
In your interactions with the people from the intelligence community, did you find like there was a story that was completely untrue in the media and the exact opposite happened in real life?
Honestly, I didn't ask them that pointed a question about stories that might have appeared in the media. I was more looking at it from the perspective of whether my book makes sense. Is that how the intelligence world in India would flow? What did come across was that there are so many more stories. It's the next book that one is trying to write is actually another story that emerged from those interactions. And you know, the smallest sort of snippet then leaves you wondering about how much expansion you can make on that snippet of conversation. And that's the struggle that's now being undertaken to try and figure if a two-phrase conversation can be expanded into a 100,000-page word book. Right. But kudos, yeah. The intelligence community is absolutely remarkable in what they do. And to do it as thanklessly and as anonymously as they do is remarkable in itself.
I also find that it speaks to your skill as a writer, where you can make a 100,000 novel based on, you know, perhaps like a 3-line story that you've heard from people who have worked for those things. So fantastic, Tarun. I'm really looking forward to reading your next book. Now, I just want to change tracks a bit. Having a very busy career, and you have such a multifaceted career as well. When do you find the time to write? Do you have any writing rituals? Something that you do to get into the zone? You know, like perhaps you meditate or perhaps you go away to a quiet corner of the house. How do you find the time to write and how do you get into the space of writing?
So, like I said, I'm not particularly organized. I know for a lot of writters, it is, you know, I will sit from 6 to 9 in the morning and no matter what, I am going to write for those 3 hours. I can't do it. Often I'll find myself in that scenario, sitting aimlessly at a desk and staring into space without putting a single word to paper. So what I did try and do when I wrote The Portrait of a Secret was whenever the inspiration struck me, I'd take some time off and find, you know, 45 minutes, an hour to sit somewhere and pound out what I could. And genuinely, if it wasn't for COVID, as bad a time as that was, I don't think this book would ever have happened. You do need sort of sustained periods of an empty brain, not occupied by the pulls and stresses of everyday work life, to try and make something creative happen. So I fortunately, that 3 weeks right in the beginning, when we were not supposed to step outside the Lakshman Rekha, was the most productive time I've had in terms of writing.
Right.
As it happens, once we figure out what to do next in sport, it took me another 18 months to get back to it. And at that point, I actually had to take a sabbatical from work to finish the first manuscript. For the second one, I am trying to be a little bit more disciplined. So I am trying to wake up early in the morning and put in at least an hour between the time my son leaves for school and the time I need to leave for office. So we are trying.
You try and write every day? Every day or once in 2 days?
I try and write every day now, but it doesn't always happen. There are just mornings you wake up too drowsy, too sleepy, too uninspired to even bother. Then there are mornings when you're happy to go to office a couple of hours late because the words are really flowing out of you and you're making significant progress. But for example, before we got onto this chat, I was trying to write today in the evening. I had a kernel of an idea again in my head, which I was trying to expand into a chapter. Hopefully that'll come out well. Let's see.
Now, let's rewind your story a bit. You know, take me a bit through your childhood. Did you write as a child? Share with me a favorite memory from your childhood.
My favorite memory from childhood in this context is actually not one of writing, but one of reading. And I had the privilege and the pleasure of living in a largish house in Jaipur. Mm-hmm. The good old days in the 80s when you actually had houses, not apartments. And in our house, we had these lovely set of three mango trees, one of which had the most beautifully shaped V into which you could sort of curl up and sit under the shade of a tree or lie down in the shade of a tree and just read a book. And mm-hmm. I've spent many hours in the heat of Rajasthan, in the heat of Jaipur, actually sitting in that tree and feeling quite at peace while reading my book. And that's a memory that's really stood with me as old as it is. So I'm thinking I was probably 6 or 7 when I was trying to do something like that. I wrote, but I never wrote seriously. I wrote because we had some assignments to do or because once in a while I'd feel like writing a short story. But nothing that I ever thought could be a potential career. It was just something for myself or something compelled of me by school.
So pure passion.
Or compulsion. Yeah, between the two of them.
Right. Now, since you work in the field of sports marketing, I'm sure you would have met a lot of sports stars. So do you have like a fun story of your interaction with a wonderful sports star that you would like to share?
I've had the pleasure of meeting a few. So I have one story which is not so fun, but it's really stuck with me, which is watching a Davis Cup match in Jaipur with Mahesh Bhupathi and Leander Place playing. I think it was the Dutch at that point of time, and trying my damnedest to get an autograph out of one of the Dutch players. If I remember correctly, his name was Elting.
Okay.
And that took me 3.5 hours to do. And at the end of it, I got the most dismissive autograph I have ever received in my life. But it was how it was. The fond memory I have is of managing and working with Mary Kom. And nice. in my effort to get her to sign an agreement where I insisted she sign every page of the agreement, her riposte was that it was simply because I was too lazy to put in physical effort, and therefore I was that fat that I was making her work that hard on signing the agreements.
Oh, so that's good.
But Mary, of course, is a sweetheart and says what comes to her mind. So that's always nice.
So that's a fun story. But maybe she's brutally honest as well.
She is brutally honest, more often than not. I think she's gotten wiser with age. But she was brutally honest for the longest time. She's, of course, now occupying many more roles of responsibility. So I guess she needs to be a little bit more careful about what she's saying. But mm-hmm. but she is one of the most genuine people I've met. And that's wonderful, right? When you get to hear what is in somebody's head, there's probably the best way forward, especially if you're in a professional relationship.
Absolutely. Now, speaking about your professional relationships, you have like a multifaceted, very varied career. And you've excelled in all of them. So what's your definition of success?
I want to say first, excelled might be a strong word. I've done okay in my career. I genuinely do believe it. I think I've done okay. I don't think I'm necessarily excelled. Success, I'm still struggling for that definition, to be honest. I think I have more of a negative definition than I have a positive one at the moment. But at the ripe old age of 40, I now know that success doesn't mean having a nice, stable job that sort of pays you a crore a year. It doesn't mean a fancy car or a nice house. It doesn't mean any of those material things. Yes, money is important, but not to the extent of giving up those things that really matter. So for me, it was not that difficult to give up the money in law to actually move into sport, which is something I enjoyed doing for the longest time.
Right.
And then to move from sport into entrepreneurship, also not so challenging for me because it is something I felt I needed to do at that point of time. So in a sense, look, I think my parents put this very nicely, right? Agar raat ko chain ki neend aati hai, you're doing okay in life. If you're sleeping restlessly, waking up in the middle of the night, something is not quite right in the balance of your own life. So at the moment, I feel like I sleep quite well. I'm quite comfortable with where I'm at.
I don't think anyone else could have done it better. Thank you. Thank you for sharing with us. Now, I want your advice for budding authors.
Look, I'm a one book author, right? So I say whatever I say is with that sort of caveat. But I genuinely believe somebody had said it, somebody very famous has said it once, that everybody has a story to tell. And I think that's genuinely true. Everybody has gone through life for whatever number of years it is. They've lived a very different experience. And out of that has certainly emerged one story or another that is worth telling and worth listening to. What I have seen happen over my sort of life is that a lot of people want to write. A lot of people even start writing. But actually getting it done is where 99% of the people probably fall off that path. So I'd say if you genuinely believe that you have a story that you want to tell, make the effort of finishing it. It's never going to be a kick-ass product at the end of your first manuscript. But right. Till you get to that first manuscript, there is nothing more you can do. So you might as well knock that out and see where it takes you. It's genuinely exactly how it happened with Portrait. I just managed to get a first manuscript done. And I was blessed enough that the four or five people that it went to liked it and suggested it might be worth pursuing as something that could be published. And many thanks to my agency at Jacaranda, Smita, for actually believing in it and putting it forward to Penguin. So a lot of luck came into play, but credit to me that I did get the manuscript done.
Didn't pay off.
Absolutely. Not giving up pays off, yeah.
And now your advice for budding entrepreneurs.
Man, it's exactly the same story. A book's a product. Anything you create as an entrepreneur is going to be a product. It's all of those things, right? Have you created something that people really want? Do you have the ability to market it? Do you have the ability to get the word out there? Do you have the ability to stick around when things are not going as well as they could be or they should be or you thought they would be? But again, I'd say, agar, like, to put it crudely in Hindi, if agar keeda hai, to ek bar karke dekh lo. You might as well get it out of your system, then live with that regret for the longest time, asking yourself every night, what if?
Give it a shot. Try.
Give it a shot. What's the worst that comes of it? You lose a year. Lose is also a strong word, but you sort of invest a year into learning something new, experiencing an entirely different sort of life. Look, anybody can get up and go to office at 9 a.m. and come back at 5 and do that for 40 years. It's not inspirational. It's not something that most people find particularly rewarding. I suspect most people do it out of fear more than anything else as to what it might be if they gave up on what they feel like they're forced to do. So I'd say life's a happier and better place than that. So maybe it's worth giving all of these dreams and passions a shot and see where it takes you.
Okay, Tarun, so now I have this next segment where I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions. You need to answer them quickly. Okay, now this segment has a very famous name called Rapid Fire. So I'm sure you know what that is. So just be quick with your answers. No need to give it a lot of deep thought. Okay, so I will start. The last book you read?
Jogi Bhasin's Those Who Wait.
Your favorite author?
Tom Clancy.
Favorite spy or espionage TV show of all time?
It's a good question. I actually don't have an immediate answer to that. I think The Blacklist is probably right up there.
Good one. What's your comfort food?
Chips.
What's your favorite travel destination?
Thailand.
Had to cast stars in your book. For a movie, who would those stars be?
I've been asked this question before, so I'm a little bit more prepared for it. I have one character in mind, which I'd love to see KK in.
KK, okay. Anyone else? Characters in your book?
I haven't. Nasiruddin Shah was another one that we were keen to have, if we could convince him to participate, but we'll see how that goes.
Good luck with that. Your favorite movie star?
Tom Cruise.
That's right. Your favorite sports star?
Virat Kohli.
What's your typical Sunday like?
It's a little bit of golf, followed by a lot of time with my 3-year-old and my family. Maybe a nap in the afternoon, maybe a little bit of writing in the evening. Nice dinner, again with the family, and an early night's sleep to start preparing for Monday.
Your favorite golf sports star? A golfer that you look up to?
Bryson DeChambeau.
Okay. Your biggest fear?
Failure at whatever I'm trying to do.
You keep trying. So the fear, you are very good at keeping the fear at bay. One can assume.
I'd like to believe yes, in a sense, though it's not to say I don't feel afraid. I do, but I'm still willing to sort of push.
Fantastic. Your dream dinner guest?
Priyanka Chopra.
Lovely. Fantastic. What was the most fun thing or activity that you did in this year so far?
We took a lovely motorboat ride somewhere near Koh Samui with the family again. And that was actually quite a lot of fun, primarily because my 3.5-year-old was as ecstatic as I've ever seen a human being be.
How cute. How cute. Do you have any other fun activities planned for the rest of the year?
I'm heading off for a boys' trip, our Zindagi Na Milegi Dobara trip later this year. So looking forward to that. We are not going to Spain or Italy or whatever it was, but we'll probably end up somewhere in Eastern Europe. But looking forward to making a trip happen with the boys after a long, long time.
Wonderful, wonderful to hear. Okay, Tarun, so as your parting words, you said about giving things a shot, you know, giving your passion a try. And you also talked about fear of failure. So what advice would you give to people who face this fear every day because they have a paycheck to earn and they're too scared to give up that paycheck or perhaps even give things that they truly like a try? How do you keep the fear at bay? Just advice for people who want to pursue other passions. Should they give up their day job and go behind it or should they not? What advice would you give?
So I want to caveat this by saying everybody's position is different, right? Because see, what my parents have done, what my grandparents have done, God willing, it'll never be a problem for me to have shelter over my head or enough food on the table to sort of feed my entire family. So that stress is not a factor in my decision making, which is, I know, hugely important for a lot of people. So with that caveat in place, I'd say, generally, if you go to work every morning dreading the prospect of facing another day of doing the same monotonous task that you've been doing for the last 15 years, I strongly urge you to find something else to do, which at least helps you wake up in the morning with a modicum of excitement at what the day might offer you. In the very worst case, as long as you have enough experience under your belt or you believe and sort of are true to yourself that you're talented enough, there's always going to be a job waiting for you in the Indian market, right? So if you do qualify within those two categories, again, I'd say strongly urge giving it a shot and just seeing what it does for you. Look, even if I've run a startup in the past, which went nowhere, we had to shut it down. But I think it's the most learning I've had in a year in my entire life. And I'm comparing that to even sort of spending a year at ISB and 5 years at law. But that 1 year teaches you so much more about how life works than any of these educational institutions will. So nothing lost, nothing gained, as they say. Thoda to risk lena padega. Or you make your peace with the fact that you will die in anonymity, having achieved nothing meaningful in life except sort of, being counted through your life.
Well, that's wonderful. So I think I'll leave that as your final words, because I think it speaks to a lot of people and their experience. Thank you so much, Tarun, for having this conversation with me. I wish you all the best with your book, and I cannot wait to read your second book. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Manini. Thank you. You'll be one of the people getting that manuscript when it's ready.
Wait. I cannot wait. Thank you so much, and thanks to everyone who is listening. Bye-bye.